Hey folks, and welcome to another pop-up episode of Prognosis Ohio. Since I, like many of you, am keeping myself out of physical society as much as possible, at least to the extent that I can, I've been taking the opportunity to connect with some good people, including some long-standing friends of the show, to talk about important issues being raised by the COVID-19 coronavirus. I wanted to send a special shout out to all those people who are out there doing jobs and providing services that have been deemed essential for the well-being of the rest of us. That includes healthcare professionals, of course, but also supermarket stockers and checkout people, people who keep our water and electric flowing, municipal services of all sorts, and many, many others, including people who spend their days in daycare centers taking care of the kids of first responders and other essential personnel. This is Prognosis Ohio, WCB's healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Ohio University Health Policy Professor Dan Skinner. While I just rattled off a very much incomplete list of people we should be supporting and giving tons of respect to at this time in our state's history, today's episode focuses mostly on those people who cannot work, who've been sent home or shut down, from people who work in the service industry to small business owners who likely have less than a few weeks, if that, of economic reserves. Obviously, the public health decisions that led to this are not an overreaction. We needed to do this for the safety of what could be millions of Americans, but it's painful nonetheless. We're already at a place where not only our health, but the economic lives of many Ohioans are reeling, with skyrocketing unemployment claims being filed, a stock market in decline, and all sorts of insecurity, from food housing to healthcare, hanging in the balance. On this episode, I checked in with friend of the show, Rob Moore, who's a whip-smart analyst and an important voice here in Ohio. As listeners know, Rob is the principal for Scioto Analysis. He's worked as an analyst in the public and nonprofit sectors, and he's analyzed diverse issue areas such as economic development, environment, education, and public health. In addition to finding Rob on Twitter, which we'll be sharing on the show notes, Rob has been providing commentary lately to the Ohio Capital Journal. We're going to share some links to his writing in the show notes as well. As always, before turning to my conversation with Rob, please subscribe to Prognosis Ohio wherever you get your podcasts, and consider following us on Twitter at Prognosis Ohio, where we continue to tweet and retweet up-to-date announcements from the state and other official entities about the coronavirus situation. Also, and I really mean this seriously, at a time when we really need each other more than ever, please don't hesitate to email us at prognosisohio@gmail.com, even if it's just a vent or share pictures of cats with us. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, now to my conversation with Rob Moore of Scioto Analysis. Hey, Rob Moore, thanks so much for joining me during this pandemic via the internet.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I'm enjoying being socially distant from you.
Yeah, actually, that gives me an opportunity to just say something I've wanted to say, which is I actually think social distancing is entirely the wrong word. I've been thinking about this a little bit. Like, we need social contact more than ever, and that's what we're doing on the phone and through social media. Maybe physical distancing is a little bit of a better term, because I need people right now almost more than I needed people 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was kind of early on thinking, oh, it wouldn't be so bad to just be, you know, be able to disappear for a little bit. But now that I'm actually doing it, I'm thinking, man, I really treasure these moments where I get to talk to somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Maybe I'm actually going to become a hugger after the COVID-19 pandemic leaves us. So, Rob, you are a important voice in Central Ohio. You run Scioto Analysis. You do economic analysis or analysis of all sorts. And a lot of it is in the area of healthcare. So I've always loved talking with you about issues on Prognosis Ohio that we care about, things around tax code or around housing or, you know, any number of issues. But we're going to talk today just a little bit about the economic aspects of this COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. And there's been a bunch of articles out there detailing kind of just the horrors that people either they're going through already or we know they will be going through, even though we don't know what the scope is. I saw President Trump just before we started talking today, a reporter asked him, said, well, are we looking at 20% unemployment? And he said, oh, no. But then he kind of said, that's an outlier. You know, and 20%, of course, would be Great Depression levels, not Great Recession levels. So we really don't know where this is going to go exactly. But I wonder if you can give us a snapshot of kind of what you're thinking about right now. Where do you think this state is, and what, if anything, is your prediction?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. There are certain industries that are being hit really hard by this. The most obvious ones that we talk about are restaurant and hospitality.
Yeah.
These industries that really, really lean on us being really close to each other. And Brookings put out a report recently, I think it was just yesterday actually, where they were looking at what parts of the country are going to be hit most heavily, you know, which metro areas. And of course, you got metro areas in Hawaii. You have Las Vegas as probably the most obvious large metro area that will be really impacted by these social distancing measures in response to the coronavirus. And then the ones that seem to be inculcated the most are more tech heavy and, you know, higher income tech heavy metro areas.
Yeah.
And Ohio doesn't really fit into either of those categories. You know, we're not a super tech heavy state at this point. We're also not a, a state that leans on tourism to a large extent. So I tried to get the full list from the researchers who did that, and they haven't released it at this point, but I'm really interested in seeing where they, you know, where Ohio's metro areas will land in that distribution. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. We're not going to be the very worst off because we're not leaning on tourism the way that, you know, a Las Vegas or a coastal state would, but we're also not inculcated because we, you know, we still lean on a lot of service in the state.
Right. And we're talking here on March 18th on a Wednesday. One dispatch article, you know, the reporting on this noted that, so, you know, two Sundays ago, 562 applications for unemployment and insurance benefits were received by the state. This Sunday, we had 12,000. So we are looking at, I mean, I don't know what the math is on that. Math's not my thing. That is a ton of unemployment applications.
Yeah, giant increase in unemployment applications. And I think we're seeing it all across the economy in Ohio, where more and more people are going to be losing their jobs, but also shifting from potentially employed to underemployed is something that we need to worry about.
Can you explain what underemployment is briefly?
If somebody is working part-time who wants to work full-time, or if somebody, you know, needs a certain amount of hours in order to pay their rent, but they're cut down from that those hours, they might shift from unemployed to underemployed. People aren't getting the amount of work that they want, or the type of work that they, you know, might be outfitted to be able to do.
So to what extent, you know, there's a story that lots of people have told about, you know, the disappearance of manufacturing in Ohio and the industrial base and kind of the just huge replacement, although replacement's not the right word, with service, right? We've really become more of a service economy. You know, to what extent is that part of the story here? Like, are people in manufacturing and industry, like the automobile industry or steel or whatever it might be, differently placed? How are those folks compared to, you know, we know the bars and restaurants are shut down, and a bar or restaurant can't always go even more than a couple of weeks without going bankrupt?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. You'd think that with manufacturing, they might have some capital built up, but you also could see some shocks to the manufacturing industry here, where people are consuming less of certain sorts of products, the broader mix of products decreasing across the economy. So there could be manufacturing shocks. But again, like you said, we have really switched over to more of a service economy in Ohio and the rest of the country. And here in Ohio, restaurants and hospitality make up a large portion of the economy. And that's what's being shut down right now. That's what coronavirus most threatens, is these industries where we're in close contact with each other, where we share space with one another. And those are the folks who are losing their jobs right now and becoming underemployed. And, you know, that cascades throughout the economy when that happens to folks.
So I saw one number, and of course, you know, listeners should keep in mind, we don't know what, you know, this is, it's a novel virus, but also this economic moment is novel as well. And, you know, I saw a number that suggested possibly as many as a million Ohioans will be unemployed, right? And we don't know what that number would be. It could be higher, it could be lower. You know, but then there's also just this question of the bigger picture. So Amazon announces that they're going to hire, I forget, what was 100,000 people or something, 4,000, 5,000 jobs in Ohio. That's certainly fine, but not, you know, and the reason why this is happening, it seems like there is a shuffling. We've all talked about, you know, Purell is doing really well. But there are certain industries that just, you know, just are, we have no idea how they're going to weather this storm. So I wonder if you could give me a sense of just, you know, how do we think about what this might mean in the short versus the long term?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully in the long term, this goes away. And, you know, people have talked about, is this going to just become an endemic disease? And are we going to be able to, you know, once we get the infection spreads throughout the population, will it infect people slower or more periodically? Hopefully that, you know, that's sort of a best case scenario at this point in the long term. But we're dealing with short term problems right now. I mean, there could be almost a million people affected, I mean, workers infected, affected in the state of Ohio. That is serious. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to be losing their income. There are going to be a lot of businesses that are going to be needing to pay rent that they can't pay. And what happens? Who gets reprieve and who doesn't? It's going to happen on a case-by-case basis. That's what's going to happen across the state. And there are a lot of question marks right now. Right now, the state has the power to, you know, the police power to be able to close businesses. That's, you know, right. that's what DeWine's been doing. But the state doesn't have a lot of economic power because we have a balanced budget requirement, and we can't just inject a bunch of money into the economy without help from the federal government.
What do we do? What are some of the policy ideas that are being floated out there? And as you note, I mean, the state can shut things down, but the state can't necessarily do bailouts or infuse the economy. We have a rainy day fund. Yeah, there's some conversation about what role that could play, if any, at this time. If there's any time for a rainy day fund, you would think that this would be it. But the federal government is probably the bigger part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just focusing in on this podcast on what the state can do. You know, last year and the year before, there was a lot of talk of, oh, we need to bust into the rainy day fund because it's raining. And, you know, some of the, you know, Kasich and a lot of the folks in the state government were kind of resistant to that argument because they're saying, no, this is budget stabilization. It's for a recession. And I think that is showing to be pretty prudent now because it is straight up raining right now. This is when it actually rains. Right. You know, the opioid epidemic was a huge deal, but it was something that was slow and controlled compared to coronavirus. It's crazy to be looking back to the opioid crisis and be like, man, those were the days. But it wasn't destroying the economy as quickly and putting people out of jobs and reducing people's hours in the way that this is. And, you know, this is going to have dynamic effects where if the state, you know, we're basically shutting down 7% of the state economy on an annual basis and just by what's happening in the next few months. So if there's a time to spend from the rainy day fund, it's right now. And that's going to take some authorization from the governor's office and the legislature working together.
I think he basically has signaled that he's willing to do that.
Yeah, which, what other time is there? It seems like right now, like you said earlier, there's going to be a recession. That's what most economists across the country are saying. They're saying that the question isn't, is there going to be a recession, but how bad is it going to be? It could be worse than 2009 if we don't do anything. It's really going to be up to the federal government to bail out the economy, but the state government in the meantime is also going to have to pay its bills and keep its doors open to be providing social services to folks. And that's where the budget stabilization fund comes in. And maybe you can use some of that budget stabilization fund for, you know, trying to help people with new programs. But I think a lot of it's going to be just backfilling the old programs.
So what do you think about, you know, the policy areas that I hear being talked about the most where they are sort of floundering around a little bit is economic relief for small businesses. And, you know, I have several friends who have small businesses. You know, I work for a large public university, so my life is quite different than my friends who own cafes or in the service world who, I mean, they can't go
very long at all. They're just going to close and that's their livelihood. And then they're in that situation where they need relief. There's also the question of, you know, bailouts for the insurance, for airline industries and other, you know, there's a whole conversation coming and it's bringing back up the memories from the 2008 Great Recession. So, you know, what about the question of economic relief? What are your hopes and what are you hearing?
You know, as far as the state of Ohio goes, so Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, has done some work to, through executive order, expand unemployment eligibility. So that's one lever that state government has. But again, that's taking things out of state funds, and state funds are going to be limited in this window. So maybe you can do it in the very, very short term, but ultimately that money is going to have to be made up somewhere. It seems like we're really going to be leaning on the federal government. Oh, another place is SNAP transfers.
Yeah.
So
right.
We've done a lot over the past, I mean, since the Great Recession, the state of Ohio has restricted SNAP eligibility more and more. But that's probably going to have to reverse. You know, it doesn't make much sense to condition benefits on work when people are all losing their jobs and don't have opportunities to pick up new work.
Right. We're seeing really the nightmare scenario that policy people like myself talk about, which is, you know, you can't develop policy with good times in mind only. You need to think about contingencies. And this is going to be an extreme contingency where people are just going to need relief. I heard that, you know, Andy Yang is getting called by the White House now, and he's talking about the universal basic income.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about $1,000 for every American on a monthly basis, possibly. Like, we don't really know what the details are, but the Trump administration does seem to realize that the fiscal stability, that the health, and we're going to turn to that a little bit more in a moment, but the health of Americans is going to require an infusion of cash, not just to industry and not just small business loans, but possibly even just cash in people's pockets.
Yeah. Emmanuel Saez and Gabriel Zucman, a couple economists who are kind of on the left side of the spectrum, they've really been pushing this idea of government as a buyer of last resort now. How the government...
Can you say what that means?
Basically, right now, we have shut down a sector of the economy by saying we're just going to close down all these restaurants and, you know, limit them to takeout, et cetera. So that's just a sector of the economy that just disappears. But all those people, you know, there's still people, you know, the businesses still exist, and hopefully we want them to come back after, you know, after the peak of the infection has passed. But in the meantime, those people don't receive any income, and the businesses can't pay their bills. So, you know, what do we do? Well, Zucman and Saez have been saying, well, the government should just come in and, you know, pay the industries. They should spend money where consumers can't. That's one way to try to target these funds. And they sort of argue against the, you know, Andrew Yang, now Mitt Romney and Tom Cotton, you know, give $1,000 to every person, because they say, well, that would be less targeted than focusing on the industry that's being most affected, which is, you know, hospitality and restaurants.
The Yang Romney Cotton gambit, right? I mean, just think of the strange bedfellows we've got going on here.
I know. AOC, Sanders, Yang, Cotton, Romney, Trump.
Right, you know, just a big happy family.
But it is it is pretty amazing that people have taken this shift towards this. And, you know, I've seen a lot of folks on the left really gravitating over the past few years as universal basic income has gained more attention. A lot of folks have been saying, well, no, maybe not universal basic income, maybe federal job guarantee. Right. And, you know, what you're talking about here about this, you know, do we make policy just for good times, or do we try to think about the bad times too? A job guarantee is kind of a difficult answer to this problem in particular, because we're trying to get people to socially distance and to not be out in work, and to try to think up a whole bunch of government jobs that allow for social distancing in this time is a bit more complicated than just infusing households with cash.
Yeah, I was just even thinking about, you know, I mean, President Trump is in a difficult situation, I mean, for a number of reasons, but one of them is that he has been tweeting about the stock market for years. Basically, I mean, he suggested that Obama should be thrown out of office because he had a bad day on the stock market. Well, Trump has now had worse days, and, you know, people are kind of throwing that back to him, as you'd expect. But the bigger question of, you know, just economic indicators, it's not clear how he's, you know, he wants to draw on tools now and resources that he has dismissed for years, and he's now rethinking them because he has to, right? It's clear that this is a moment, if there's ever a moment, where presidential leadership and, you know, people have been celebrating Mike DeWine and Director Acton here in Ohio, but this is clearly a moment where you need the kind of logistical heft of the federal government and also the Treasury.
I mean, we're in crazy times. Who would have thought 6 months ago, if somebody had said Governor DeWine is going to overrule a court ruling to delay the presidential primary in Ohio indefinitely?
Yeah.
If somebody said that 6 months ago, everyone would be like, are you crazy? How could that possibly be something that is okay? But here we are. I mean, we're in a situation where we're really trying to get people to reduce their contact with each other. And, you know, that could have been lives that were lost there. And that was the calculation that was made. And it seems like in general, the public seems to be pretty supportive of some pretty extreme measures, closing a giant sector of the economy, telling people that they can't gather. I mean, these are pretty extreme measures to be taken, but the public, generally from what I'm hearing, seems to be pretty supportive.
So the IRS has suspended tax payments, I think, by 90 days. One of the things I was going to mention before is that President Trump was talking about the sort of unemployment numbers, which are going to get, you know, I mean, unemployment's going to totally convulse very soon. It already has. We just don't know what the numbers are exactly. But the census, you know, is always a time where after, you know, you have the holiday season and all this purchasing, all these temporary jobs, and then the census comes. The census is supposed to be done by April 1st, right? And the census hiring, you know, is usually a huge bump to the economy. But how do you go door to door during a pandemic to follow up on people about their census reports, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if that just means you do it later and it's really, really bad timing for the census. I mean, we've just been talking about the census for years now and how important this is. If these census counts are delayed, what does that mean for redistricting? What does that mean for, you know, redrawing of these lines and for congressional apportionment and, you know, the balance of power within Congress, especially when, and even the state government, when you have pretty substantial urbanization happening over the past decade, and we're going to have to put off the time that we measure that. How is that going to impact the balance of power between rural and urban state legislators? I mean, I haven't done a calculation recently or an analysis, but I've got to expect that some of these urban districts have much higher population than some of the rural districts 10 years ago. And that means that, you know, one person, one vote is being bent and twisted a little bit for the time being.
It's also another way of saying that Ohio has particular stakes in the census. We have a declining population, but we also have extraordinarily gerrymandered districts. And it's likely we're going to lose a congressional seat or two in the next census. That has real consequences for all sorts of things like federal flows from the Treasury and how we think about just the power of Ohio within the broader American political landscape. So not to necessarily, you know, get too far into that political question during this time of crisis, but it's huge. It has consequences that will endure for decades.
I think this is a really important question, especially when you talk about what you cover in this podcast. Ohio is one of the states that was really on the border, and it's really on the edge. 10,000 people counted one direction or another direction could mean the difference between Ohio keeping its congressional, its 12th congressional seat or losing it. And if we delay the census count by a year, that very well could be the difference between Ohio keeping that congressional seat or losing it. I mean, that's a big difference, especially here in Ohio.
Yeah, and it's unfashionable perhaps to talk in such lofty ways about things like preserving democracy during a time of public health crisis. But I think that's one of the things we should be doing right now, is to make sure that when we do come on the other side of this, we've learned something from it, but also we've preserved some of our key institutions. And that's why like a governor or health director canceling an election, like, I think she did the absolutely right thing. But it's hugely consequential.
Yeah, and we're just in this moment right now. I mean, there have been a lot of times when we've overreached into our democracy in times of crisis. I mean, go back all the way back to Alien and Sedition Acts. Go mm-hmm. back to Japanese internment during World War II. Even the Patriot Act in the past 20 years. I mean, there are a lot of times when we've been in a moment, we've thought that something was the right thing to do in a moment, and then look back and been like, man, we really bent and twisted what this country is about in a moment of crisis. And I think that it seems right now that the leadership has been, you know, pretty solid and, you know, taking in the best advice of medical experts. But, you know, medical experts and experts on civil liberties and experts on the economy all need to be coming together and all need to have a place at the table.
One final question for you, Rob, which is, so to specifically, you know, you've talked about SNAP, the program that so many Ohioans count on just to feed themselves. And we've learned in shutting the schools down that lots of kids, they receive their nutrition through school lunches and school breakfasts. So some municipalities have come up with ways to have curbside pickups and to maintain that program through this. Can you draw some of the other health consequences specifically of what's at stake in relation to this economic cloud that's, you know, looming over us? What are some of the health consequences we should be thinking about?
I'll bring up two health consequences in particular. Well, really two health relationships. We know that income has an impact on health. We've done a lot of, there's this growing body of research that's been developing just over the past few years, really, about how cash transfers and income impact health, whether that's diabetes or even things like obesity, people's ability to be able to infant mortality is another thing there's been a big connection between income and health. So there are a lot of places where if you lose your income temporarily, it's going to impact your health and your family's health, and this is something that we need to be worried about. But I also worry about, as we talked about a little bit earlier, social distancing and what its impacts are on well-being. We have a growing body of research that's saying that social connection and, you know, whether you're in a committed relationship or whether you have friends that you spend time with on a regular basis or your family or even acquaintances impact people's well-being so much, and that can lead to, you know, social isolation can lead to lower lifespans and more developing of disease. And especially when we're talking about people who are most vulnerable to coronavirus, these are also people, you know, people in long-term care especially, who are so vulnerable to social isolation and the health impacts.
So much of the conversation's been about age, right? And, you know, thinking about the different positions that kids are in older people, but also mental health, the convergence of being, you know, kept indoors, being kept away from people, families who can't visit their loved ones. I talked to somebody at Children's Hospital the other day here on this podcast, to Dr. Dempster, who's a pediatric